Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Kate Brown, and I am the newsroom assistant here at ProPublica. And I want to tell you about a very, very special project that we've been working on here called Election Land. Election Land is our effort to cover voting. Voting is a really, really important, maybe the most important part of democracy. And Election Land is a project that covers access to the ballot. We are going to report in real time and in every single state any problems at the polls that could keep people from casting their votes on Election Day. We have partners helping us do this, like Google News Lab, USA Today, Univision, and nearly 400 local reporters across the country. It is very cool. Please do come check it out at election.land. You can also help us by texting us about your voting experience. To sign up, text the word ELECTIONLAND to the number 69866. That's ELECTIONLAND to the number 69866. Then, on November 8th, we will send you a friendly reminder to go out and vote and to text us what it was like casting your vote at your polling station. Please do not take a selfie in the voting booth. We want to eliminate voting obstacles, not create them. Happy voting, and we'll see you in ELECTIONLAND.
Happy Halloween, podcast listeners. Today, we're going to talk about polls, which can be terrifying, and especially so during this election. A perfect podcast for Halloween. I'm Jessica Hoosman, a senior reporting fellow here at ProPublica. I report about voting and election administration with our Election Land project. And today, I'm talking to Harry Inton, an analyst and reporter with 538. We'll chat about good polls and bad polls and how to tell them apart. And we'll also talk about how journalists can do better when we write about polls. Harry, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So your background is in political forecasting. So can you talk a little bit about how you came to be a reporter for 538?
I mean, it's a boring story, but essentially, you know, I studied this stuff in college, had a few internships, then with pollster.com, for example, which is one of another of the polling aggregation websites, started my own blog. Got picked up by The Guardian when it came to the United States. And then from The Guardian in the United States, I landed at 538 because Nathaniel Silver thought I could add something to his site and not just good looks.
Well, we agree. So do you consider yourself a journalist or do you consider yourself to be a political forecaster or both?
That's a great question. I would say that if you ask some people in this organization, they consider themselves to be journalists. If you asked other people, they would call themselves analysts. I will let it up to the public to decide what is the exact designation that I have. I myself don't usually refer to myself as a journalist, but I'm not running away from the label either.
I think polls are a little bit of a mysterious thing for some listeners and even sometimes for me. So I know your boss, Nate Silver, has written that he doesn't really like to criticize individual polls because it's a kind of a form of cherry picking. So I won't make you do that, but I'd really like to know what you think makes a poll bad. What should listeners look for if they're trying to determine whether or not they should pay attention to any given poll?
Well, I think that there are two examples. There's the nerdy example, which is why a particular poll is bad. And then there's the more straightforward answer is how to tell whether or not a poll is bad without necessarily having all the in-depth knowledge. I'll answer both of those. And the simpler way, the way I usually say is, have you ever heard of the poll and or the organization that's sponsoring the poll? For example, if you hear a poll has been conducted by ABC News or NBC News or CBS News, then that poll is probably pretty good. If you haven't heard of the particular poll, let's say the Gravis Marketing Breitbart poll, then that poll probably isn't necessarily up to snuff. That doesn't mean it's a terrible poll, but it does probably mean that the quality of the poll is not quite up to the standards that we would usually like to say if we were citing one particular poll, an example. Now, what makes a good poll versus a bad poll? I think the key thing that distinguishes a good poll from a bad poll is a good poll makes sure it polls the entire population. That is, that each person in the population has an equal chance of being selected. Because that's what's really key in polling, is that we have complete coverage of the entire population, especially in elections where we see great differences between young African Americans who are much more likely to be Democratic but are much harder to poll or at least get a hold of, and say older white voters who are much more easy to get a hold of but are much more likely to be Republican.
I wanted to ask you specifically about this LA Times poll that Trump really likes because it seems to have him more ahead, at least, than a lot of other polls that have him comfortably behind. Could you talk a little bit about that poll and why it's different and why Trump likes it so much?
Well, I think he likes it because it has him ahead. I mean, Trump would like a poll that was conducted by my mom out on the street corner if it had him ahead, and he'd be saying she was the smartest woman ever. But in terms of why the poll is so favorable for Trump, it's a few things. Number one, the USC LA Times poll relies upon a panel. That is, that they go back to the same people over and over and over again. Then that in itself doesn't necessarily make the poll bad. There are plenty of panel surveys that have been quite accurate. The RAND survey back in 2012 was a panel survey that did particularly good at projecting that Barack Obama was going to win. But what happens is, if the participants in the panel are not an accurate representation of the voting population, then that means you're just going to repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again. And it turns out that in this particular case, in fact, there is some slight problems with how the panel represents the public. For example, they don't necessarily have enough younger voters, especially young minority voters, which means that they have to weight up those responses so that they match the percentage of the population. And it turns out that they got very unlucky in the young people, especially young minority people that they chose, so that they tend to be much more Republican leaning than young people are overall, or young minorities are overall. So what's occurring is these younger minority people are being weighted up tremendously, but they tend to be more Republican than the younger people overall, which then makes the entire sample more Republican overall. That's one thing. And then the second thing that's very important to understand why that poll tends to lean more Republican is because they are weighting their respondents to be to look like the 2012 general electorate in terms of how they said that they voted. So that they say that Barack Obama essentially won this group by about 4 percentage points. Now, that's the margin that he won by in 2012. However, this is people recalling their past vote. That's a problem because people tend to either lie or misremember their past vote. And if you were to actually ask all of the voters from 2012 how they voted back then, but ask them this year, you'd in fact find among that group that Barack Obama would probably, people would say that Barack Obama won by 9 percentage points, even though he actually only won by 4. So that when they weight it back down, they're actually creating a more Republican sample. Because if, say, they found a sample that actually voted for Mitt Romney by 1 percentage point, that same sample would probably say that they, in fact, voted for Barack Obama by 4. And that's essentially what you get going on here. And that's why Trump has consistently led, usually by about 1 percentage point on average.
Trump has repeatedly, especially in the last couple of weeks, criticized professional polling and instead turned to these online polls that have him up or have him winning the debates by huge margins. And even his professional surrogates, some of whom have been doing this politics thing for a really long time, are shockingly relying on these online polls. Do you think that that is persuasive for people? Because these polls are pretty bad. They're not real.
They're not real. We've tried to come up with nicknames for these online polls after the debates. And, you know, he's winning in the Drudge poll by 50, 60, 70, 80, sometimes upwards of 90 percentage points. They're not real polls. I think that they do speak to his base, you know, the people that love him. But the fact is that base is only worth perhaps upwards of 40% of the national electorate, and that's just not going to be good enough for him to win. It's good enough for him to get good rally sizes and make him feel good, but they're not real polls. I'm kind of disappointed in some of the people I've heard celebrating those polls on television, some of his surrogates, because there's nothing wrong with being a Donald Trump supporter in my mind. However, there's something tremendously wrong about lying and knowing that you're lying. And when it comes to these online polls, people know better, and a lot of his surrogates know better than to believe that these polls are accurate representations of what's actually going on.
You know, I've heard and read a lot of columns and people who like to get on television and comment on the election say things like, don't pay attention to the polls. They're never right. No one knows who's going to win the election. And I just wonder if that makes you as angry as it makes me.
It makes me incredibly frustrated. When you hear someone like Kellyanne Conway saying potentially that the polls are skewed or that this oversampling thing with the, you know, WikiLeaks email, oh, the polls are oversampling Democrats, we have the proof. Kellyanne Conway knows what oversampling is and has nothing to do with any of that. It just has to do with understanding how one smaller part of the population's voting, like the NBC News Telemundo poll, takes an oversample of Latinos so that we know to get a larger sample to understand how Latinos are voting, because usually they're too small a part of the population so that a normal survey wouldn't understand what they're doing. Kellyanne Conway oversamples all the time. She had a poll during the Republican primary that oversampled Republicans. And it's just so incredibly frustrating when you know that these people know that what the polls are showing nationally are being conducted the same way that they're always been conducted, and they have tended to be accurate. And for them to say otherwise is very disheartening.
Okay, that's really good to hear. I just wonder if there's anything that you think isn't polled that perhaps should be, or perhaps is not polled enough.
Well, I mean, in terms of states, I think the presidential race has been polled pretty well. We've got a very good idea of where the presidential race is going. Yeah, maybe I'd like an extra poll, you know, in Wisconsin or New Hampshire. But for the most part, it's the presidential race is being polled particularly well. In the Senate races, I'd love some more polls in Missouri and Indiana, especially Missouri, a tight race there. But in terms of non-horse racy stuff, things that I wish were polled more often, I think there are obviously some issues that I wish were polled more often. You know, I wish the death penalty were polled more often. I wish abortion and different ways in which the question can be asked, abortion rights was polled more often. And, you know, I just think that there are a whole bunch of issues that a laundry list that we could go through that I wish were polled more often, or things that, you know, have been polled in the past that haven't been polled in a while that we could talk about. But the fact is, that's not so, quote unquote, sexy, and presidential politics is. And that's why we get all the polls in the presidential race.
Sure. Do you think that if those things, those social issues that you mentioned, like abortion, if those were polled more often, do you think that that would have a meaningful impact on policy or public perception of these issues?
I think it absolutely can. I mean, it's one of these things that's been so interesting sort of to me over the past few years was same-sex marriage became much more popular with the public before a lot of Democratic politicians started adhering to that public opinion and changing their minds and coming out in favor of same-sex marriage. I think when you have polls that show where Americans really stand, it makes it much more difficult for politicians to BS, as you might say, around certain issues and say, this is where the public actually stands, when in fact the polls show something different. That's why I think polls can be so valuable, is it leaves less for politicians to sort of lie about, and we get a true understanding of where the public actually is.
I think that's a really good segue into a question about how journalists use polls in our daily reporting. Could you talk a little bit about how journalists could do a better job using polls meaningfully in their reporting?
Well, I think, in all honesty, the way that journalists could do a much better job is instead of relying on a single data point, they rely on multiple data points. I think the thing that's most frustrating to me is when a journalist or a writer uses a poll to back up a point that may confirm a few interviews, when there are a whole bunch of other polls that, in fact, don't back up that point at all. One example might be more recently, you know, in the past week, there was a poll taken in the state of Florida from Bloomberg, done by Ann Selzer, who's a great pollster, no doubt about it, that showed Donald Trump ahead. But the vast majority of the polls in Florida have, in fact, shown Hillary Clinton ahead. So any story that was written about that particular poll needed to use the average of polls to put that particular poll into context. And I'm fearful that many stories, in fact, didn't do that. And I think that's something that we can work on as a profession going forward.
Great. And, you know, you at 538 have some pretty excellent resources when it comes to averages of polls and forecasting. Could you give our listeners just a little breakdown for those who might not be as familiar with 538, what they might be able to find on your site that would help them understand polling better or use polling better in their political conversations?
Sure. So in the presidential race, for example, we take all of the state polls. We take all of the national polls. We average those together in a complex manner, but for the sake of this conversation, we'll say we average them together, and we understand in the past how accurate or how predictive those averages have been at predicting who's going to win and who's going to lose, and we're able to assign a percentage chance that someone is going to win and someone's going to lose based upon the past and where the polls are right now. And that, to me, gives us a better understanding of where the race is. For example, we know that a 3-point lead in the state of Florida in late October is a lot more meaningful than a 3-point lead in the state of Florida in late June. And we are able to show that by saying, hey, right now with a 3-point lead, Hillary Clinton's an odds-on favorite to win in the state of Florida. Well, back in June, that same lead would have, in fact, had a much tighter race.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Harry. That was really excellent. It was helpful for me. I hope it was helpful to our listeners.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week.